There's a reason Jon Stewart featured author Marilyn K. Roach as a guest on The Daily Show not long ago. Although her latest book, Six Women of Salem, The Untold Story of the Accused and Their Accusers in the Salem Witch Trials, deals in what is rapidly becoming ancient history, in reading the book, I was struck by how contemporary many of the impulses and suspicions that led to those trials and executions actually sound. With science under attack in our classrooms and our public square, with religious convictions increasingly threatening rational coexistence, there may be much in this story that is frighteningly relevant today. And that's why I am so pleased to welcome Marilyn Roach to State of Belief Radio. Marilyn, thank you.
Thank you.
You have written previously about the Salem witch trials. Mm-hmm. What made you want to focus on the personalities involved this time around?
This way, I can spend more time with an individual rather than trying to tell the whole story with a cast of thousands. And, you know, try to make them more real and not just symbols of something or, you know, paper doll cutouts of Halloween stuff. But, you know, they were real people. And there was enough information with these six anyway to fill in the story of what their lives were like before in most cases.
Tell us something about the main players in this horrific drama.
Oh, yeah. Well, the six are Rebecca Nurse, who's the oldest of them. She's married and has a large, intact family of grown children in their families. And they rally around her and support her through the whole ordeal and get neighbors to sign a petition saying that she's a good person. And it doesn't work in the end, but they stuck by her. And Bridget Bishop, on the other hand, was perhaps a more prickly character, and it didn't seem like anybody spoke up for her. She had been suspected before of witchcraft, and apparently that charge was dismissed because she was still alive 10 years later. And she, unfortunately, does not survive either. Mary English is the richest woman in Salem, married to the richest man in Salem. He's a successful merchant. And, well, they didn't stop neighbors from being suspicious, apparently. But she was quite well-educated and businesswoman in her own right, too. She and her husband are both accused and jailed, but they do escape, not to spoil the plot or anything, but they do escape and outlive the panic. And Putnam Sr. is an accuser rather than an accused. She has a couple of children who have died recently, which isn't terribly unusual with infant mortality, but she's taken it to heart and wonders if perhaps evil magic had contributed to that. For some reason, she just does not like Rebecca Nurse, and that kind of explodes badly in this year of panic. And Tituba is the slave woman belonging to Reverend Samuel Parris in Salem Village. She's always referred to as an Indian, presumably came from the Caribbean area somewhere. And she's not in a good position being a slave. She doesn't have a whole lot of resources. She is accused. She's named and has only her wits to save her. And Mary Warren, the sixth, is a hired girl whose family has been broken by illness. And she doesn't have too many prospects for the future unless she meets some up-and-coming young man who wants to marry her and does better for himself than people who aren't doing too well economically, because there are various economic problems in the region at the time.
Ms. Roach, I'm really curious about the kind of original research you were able to do. Would you mind talking a little about that process?
There's never enough papers survive when you really want to know everything that happened, but there's a lot of it for this set of trials. They're in different institutions. A lot of them are in the Massachusetts Archives and the Essex County Archives. Most of them were available in print, and more of them now, while I was working on the book, others get published. And online now, too, so you can see what the original documents look like. a little archaeology came into it because the cellar hole of the parsonage in Salem Village was excavated, and they found old pieces of pottery and glass and, you know, tiny little minutiae, but it paints a picture of what the times were like. Just since the bicentennial of the Revolution, all sorts of local history was reexamined in different places, and for one thing, the witch trials of 92 and other periods were reexamined by scholars, taking it seriously instead of just dismissing it as nonsense. So other articles came out. Other documents in the Massachusetts archives, I tried to read everything that happened with the period, like expenses for the war that was going on with Canada and their native allies, and just bills that didn't get paid. There was another set of room and board bills for some of the prisoners in 1692, some of them accused of witchcraft and others. I mean, there were still burglars working their trade at the time, too. So,
well, Ms. Roach, am I wrong in seeing this as almost a cautionary tale for today's America? I'm not talking about actual witch executions, of course, but are there elements to the story that contain it safely within 17th century, or are we still seeing some of this?
Oh, well, human nature doesn't seem to change. Yes, it is cautionary, but because the circumstances are so bizarre to us that, you know, if something starts to go wrong, it's not recognized necessarily until things get too far down the road of mistakes. Something was happening to make the original so-called afflicted girls appear like they were having convulsions. And in some cases, I think there were actual illnesses involved, and some of it psychological. But even if something is really going wrong, it doesn't mean that the first solution to it as to what was causing it is necessarily the right one. And if people start panicking and jumping to conclusions, this is sort of, the 1692 trials are a prime example of jumping to conclusions.
Is that the main teaching about human nature coming out of Salem, or is there one that you put in italics and say, we should have learned this here?
Well, one is supposed to be able to learn from the past if you can recognize that the same thing is happening in a different guise. Jumping to conclusions and acting on insufficient proof, I would say, is a big part of what we might be able to learn from this.
When you hear accusations of Satanism and possession today, for example, hurled at LGBT people by some religious leaders, are there parallels we can draw?
Not to jump to conclusions or to demonize people.
Well, you know, there are parts of the world, particularly South Africa, where atrocities continue to be committed in the name of battling witchcraft and demonic possession. Are there lessons to be learned from Salem in combating these kinds of ongoing tragedies?
Well, I would hope so. Certainly it's well known because of the history and that got preserved in plays like Arthur Miller's Crucible, which is more or less historical. It's known as an example of when things went wrong. I would hope that people could examine other panics. And certainly witchcraft fears in various parts of the world are still going on. And people are really suffering from it, that is, those who are accused.
I know that you got really familiar with these six people. Did you find yourself having an affinity for any one of them?
Well, it was like, yeah. Well, as I've said before, Bridget Bishop could be cranky, and I identified with that from time to time.
I wonder what writing this book did to you.
Well, it made me look at the available material differently and see it differently than I had when I was writing other things about the same topic. Obviously, the innocent, the accused, were innocent of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder why the people who were accusing them thought what they thought, or in some cases, why they said things that they said they thought. I wondered how convinced anybody was at any one time. I would imagine that at some point they would realize, I'm guessing, but realize that their suspicions were not founded on accurate information, but that it was too difficult to retract what you'd been saying so vehemently all along. At what point did they realize it?
So what made them despise these people enough to make those charges?
It's hard to say. I don't know why Ann Putnam Sr. didn't like Rebecca Nurse so much. Mm-hmm. Whatever altercation they might have had just didn't get recorded.
Yeah. No.
In Mary Warren's case, a neighbor, Ann Parker, came over and had an argument with her parents around the time that her mother, Mary's mother, and little sister became ill with something that was real. There was smallpox in the area. It might have been that. And the mother dies, and the little sister becomes deaf because of it. And she, Mary, assumes that this is a matter of witchcraft, or she convinces herself of it. So there was a good deal of family misfortune that got blamed on the neighbor that time.
Marilyn K. Roach is the author of Six Women of Salem, the untold story of the accused and their accusers in the Salem Witch Trials. Her 2007 book, The Salem Witch Trials, A Day-by-Day Chronicle of a Community Under Siege, is being published in paperback this summer. Marilyn, this book is a fascinating look at a time that is a lot less distant than it seemed to be, and that I wish it was.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your generous support is essential in helping to make this show possible. Please visit stateofbelief.com and consider making a financial contribution to support us today. We'll use it wisely to keep State of Belief on the air and to expand the reach of this program. Every week, we hear from listeners across the country who tell us that they rely on our show for the kind of inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue that they simply can't find anywhere else. We want that to keep happening. Stateofbelief.com is where you'll find out more about this show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. Stay in touch with us, please, throughout the week. You can do that on Facebook and Twitter, or you can call our listener line, 202-681-4246. We encourage you to tell others about the show and encourage them to listen right along with you and others so all of us can have a conversation over the air. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.